There was a lot of that going around, they discovered as they saw scores of other Confederates retreating toward the river. Once again, not everybody wanted to wait to use the bridge. In fact, now that they were retreating, even fewer men worried about that. Into the river they went, bullets kicking up spurts of water around them as they swam for safety. Corey and Abner both risked drowning to get back on the right side of the river. Sputtering, they came up out of the water as they reached the east bank. Lieutenant Bean came up from somewhere, his face bloody from a gash on his forehead. "Fall back!" he shouted. "Regroup along the road!" That was where they had started, Corey thought. He had a suspicion that the battle had not gone well for the Confederates, and he had to admit that he and his companions probably had not helped matters by herring off after those Yankees on their left flank. At the time, it had seemed like there was nothing else they could do. If they had kept on as planned, they risked being destroyed by enfilading fire. Now, having gotten a better look at the Federal forces, he knew there hadn't been enough Yankees to wipe them out, or even slow them down much. They should have gone where they were supposed to go. Firing continued up and down the Flint River until darkness fell, when it finally tapered off and eventually stopped altogether. Battered and exhausted, the Southerners licked their wounds and tried to catch their breath. Just as Corey suspected, the overall attack had failed. After several hours of bloody fighting, each side occupied about the same ground it had before the combat began. The Confederates were still between the Yankees and the Macon and Western Railroad, though. That was the important thing. Atlanta's lifeline was still secure. Only, it wasn't. That afternoon, while the fighting raged west of Jonesboro, Sherman had shifted still more men to the northeast and driven straight across the tracks between Jonesboro and Atlanta. The Macon and Western was cut, and down in Jonesboro, Hardy and Lee didn't even know it. In Atlanta, Hood was informed of these developments and concluded that Sherman was about to launch a full-scale attack on the city from the south. Hurriedly, he sent word to Jonesboro, ordering Hardy to send Lee's corps back to Atlanta. Hardy was to remain where he was and hold Jonesboro. Thinking that Hood was underestimating the Union forces that still threatened Jonesboro, Hardy had no choice but to comply with Hood's orders anyway. Now at half strength, Hardy's men faced the bulk of Sherman's army. He stretched his line as thin as possible, running it along the western edge of the town and then turning back to the east and north across the railroad tracks. Not knowing that the Confederates had weakened themselves, the Yankees moved slowly during the day on September 1st, 1864, the day after the battle along the Flint River. That gave the Southerners the opportunity to erect some breastworks of their own. Corey and Abner were a couple of 100 yards to the right of the spot where the Confederate line bent to cross the railroad. They knelt behind a barricade of logs and cotton bales. In front of their position, and off to the left, was a large cotton field. The railroad tracks were to their left as well.
"Wonder how many of them damn Yanks are really over yonder," Abner said as he wiped sweat from his brow.
"No telling. Nobody's fared very well so far predicting exactly what Sherman's going to do."
"He's a fighting son of a gun, I'll give him that much. We should have known better. It looked like he turned tail and run. There don't seem to be much quit in him,"
Abner chuckled.
"Well, there ain't much quit in us damn stubborn rebs neither."
A few skirmishes broke out around mid-afternoon as some Yankees probed toward the Confederate line. Then, a short time later, a full-scale assault began as the Federals advanced through the cotton fields that lined the railroad. The Southerners had time to get ready. They fired from behind their hastily erected barriers, and each volley extracted a fearful toll from the charging Yankees. But no matter how many of the blue-clad soldiers fell, never to rise again, even more of them kept coming. Corey found himself following the mindless pattern of so many battles. Load, aim, fire. Load, aim, fire. Try not to think about the shoulder aching from countless recoils, or the nose and eyes seared by clouds of powder smoke, or the ears that rang from the constant din. Frantic sounds from the left drew his attention. He glanced that way and saw that the line was collapsing at the spot where it bent into a right angle. Yankees poured through the gap, shooting and waving their battle flags. All Corey and his companions could do was hope that the reserves came up and plugged that hole, otherwise the Yankees would continue to split the line. They couldn't turn to repulse the Federals because they had to deal with the attack in front of them. The breakthrough threatened the entire line, however. Once the Yankees had penetrated, there was no stopping them. An officer hurried along the line, shouting, "Retreat! Retreat!" until a Yankee bullet felled him. The Confederates pulled back, still fighting. Their retreat an orderly one instead of a rout. But rout or not, they had failed to hold, and once again the Yankees were going to emerge triumphant from an engagement. Reserves finally came up, along with the Confederate artillery, and stopped the Federal advance. The damage had been done already, however. The Macon and Western Railroad was firmly in Union hands between Atlanta and Jonesboro. The circle of Yankees around Atlanta was almost complete. That night, Hardy regrouped his men and pointed them south toward Lovejoy's Station. Stephen Lee's corps was somewhere between Jonesboro and Atlanta, not yet having reached the city after being summoned by Hood to help forestall an attack that had not come. And in Atlanta itself, Hood and the Confederates remaining there began the bitter task of evacuating the city. Time had run out. Hood's army was divided into three sections, and unless they reunited quickly, Sherman would be able to fall on each section in turn and utterly destroy it. Corey and Abner were among thousands of dispirited men marching along the road to Lovejoy Station that night, tramping through the darkness in retreat as they had so many times before.
"Where you reckon we'll go now?" Abner asked.
Corey could only shake his head.
"No telling. Macon, maybe, or maybe we'll go all the way to Savannah. Now that Sherman's got Atlanta, what's going to stop him from pushing on all the way to the Atlantic?"
"We'll stop him," Abner said.
Corey didn't say anything. He didn't point out that, in the end, they hadn't been able to stop Sherman from doing just about anything he wanted to. Yes, time had run out for Atlanta, Corey thought. How much longer before it ran out for the Confederacy itself?